Hey, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Mindshare Podcast. This show is sponsored by Kits Keep In Touch Systems, as well as our friends over at REM Real Estate Magazine. Learn more about our sponsors by visiting my site, mindshare101.com. Now, while you're there, be sure to download your free copy of my book, The Ultimate Marketing Bundle, as well as learn more about our one-to-one coaching and keynote speaking. Today's episode is number 261. He is the chair of AREA's Trust in Real Estate Services Act Regulations Task Force. He is broker of record of Erie's Edge Real Estate. He is a fellow of the Real Estate Institute of Canada, a recipient of AREA's Cardarelli Legacy Award, and past president of AREA in 2016. He is AREA's realtor in residence, responding to members' questions about Tressa. And he's been at it for 28 years, so he knows what he's talking about when it comes to all things real estate. Joining me on this episode of the Mindshare Podcast is chair of AREA's Trust in Real Estate Services Act Regulations Task Force and broker of record, realtor, Mr. Realtor, Ray Ferris. Mr. Ferris, welcome to the welcome back to the Mindshare Podcast.
Yeah, it's great to be back again, David. Thank you very much.
Listen, I know you are a super busy man. You are, it's like Superman. You can be in like 17 different places in the world at one point in your day. I've been watching online. It's been absolutely amazing to watch, how much ground you've been covering lately about trust. And I know there's a ton of questions coming from realtors about it. Now in effect, full effect as of December 1st, we know that many people confused about, how it changes their day to day. Frustrated by all the forms they need to fill out, and lots of questions surrounding just some of the new options available to both buyers and sellers. I also personally wonder why any buyer or seller would want to be involved in an open offer process, but I figure we'll cover that today. And all that said, I guess I just say there's definitely a ton of questions which you're well aware of, and today is very much about trying to clarify so that people can get used to the new requirements. Try to break it down to its simplest form.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I think we don't like change. Nobody likes change, but this change is a very positive change. There's lots of areas where I think the government made the right step in terms of consumer protection. And that was something that Ontario realtors demanded of the provincial government. Let's go back to 2016, David. Mm-hmm. That was the year I was actually president of AREA. That was even the same year that first scathing CBC marketplace piece aired.
Is that already 2016, right?
2016. Wow. I remember it all too well.
Wow.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
Because I had to respond to that disgusting conduct caught on hidden camera. And look, Ontario realtors were outraged by the behavior that they saw. They were disgusted. And it was, in fact, Ontario realtors who called on the government to raise the bar. And that was the beginning of the changes to the modernization that we've experienced in real estate legislation. So these changes were a ground movement created by Ontario realtors themselves.
You know, I want to give a tip of the hat nod here to our industry. And all of the amazing people working in our industry and the collective that we have as a group together to be able to come together and show what kind of power we have as a collective when we can be on the same page about things. I think, and it's obviously set the tone for where we are today with this now. So looking back to 8 years ago, here we are today. This really has been growing for the past 8 years.
Yeah, for sure. So the government decided to modernize the act. And to do that, they have to reach out to its stakeholders. They don't just make these decisions in a vacuum. And as much as we don't like to believe that government hears what we're saying, they do, in fact, recognize realtors as the experts on the real estate file. So they reached out to AREA, its largest stakeholder on the real estate file, and said, what do you guys think we need to do to modernize the act? What are you guys looking for? And so we gave them, I think it was almost 40 recommendations, David. We said, here's 40 things that we think you need to do to strengthen consumer protection right here in the province. So they went away with our recommendations. And what they did is they came back and they gave us a draft of some ideas that they were putting forward. And that's when Aria struck the Trust and Real Estate Services Act Regulations Task Force and appointed me chair, something I've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And what we did as a task force is we spent hours pouring through those proposals to let the government know what we liked, what we didn't like, what we thought would work, and what we thought wouldn't work. And that took years. I mean, government is like a big ship. Big ships move slowly.
You're right. But absolutely.
They had to do it to get it right. And here we are now, what is it? Almost 2 weeks in to the Trust and Real Estate Services Act Phase 2 regulations. And I should note, though, however, Phase 1 regulations came into effect in October of 2020. That's when the government delivered personal real estate corporations for Ontario right. realtors
yep.
and new descriptors for us to use in our real estate advertising. So it's such a significant overhaul to REBA that the government did break it down into those phases 1, 2, and 3. We're not done yet. Sometime in 2024, the government wants to consult with us about more changes to this real estate legislation. And that's what we're going to deal with in phase 3.
So, okay, looking at that then, could we say right off the hop here that we feel that the government is actually working in our favor, working to help us? Are they working against us? Like, if we look at what's coming down the pipe in 24, and not, you know, we can either touch the tip of the iceberg on what some of those things are, 25 or 24, what did you just say, 24 or 25?
24.
Okay, for phase 3, I know the years, right? Like, they're going fast. Are they working in our favor on that? Do we see anything that's going to be working against us on that we should be concerned about when they look for more changes?
Yeah. So look, we haven't put all of our recommendations on the table yet for phase 3. There's been some challenges we've faced with the ministry, and that is we've gone through, I think, 3 different cabinet ministers as a result of cabinet shuffles. And every time that happens, David, that slows the entire process down. Sure. So right now at Aria, what we're doing as a task force is we're compiling a list of topics that we want to discuss with the ministry. One of those is creating specialty certifications for realtors. As everybody will know, right now, Ontario realtors can't refer to themselves as specialists in any practice of real estate. Look, I've been a realtor for 28 years, as you mentioned. I live on the waterfront. I sell 90% recreational real estate. Yet I can't hold myself out to be a recreational specialist. We think that's wrong. We think that if realtors can demonstrate that they truly are specialists in a particular field of real estate, that they should be allowed to call themselves specialists. And we think that's good for consumers too. Consumers who want to buy a cottage should have the ability to look for somebody who can hold themselves out to be a specialist in that practice of real estate. And recreational is one that's near and dear to me because that's what I do. But there's other specialty certifications like farm, yep. Like condos, for example. The list goes on and on and on.
Sure.
The government wants to talk to us about cooling off periods. Some of the participants on today's call will know that in the province of British Columbia, the government had a knee-jerk reaction out there, and they allow buyers to back out of a real estate transaction for no reason whatsoever for up to 3 days after the transaction becomes firm. At Aria, we think that has significant negative consequences attached to it. We think that real estate policies should work in all types of real estate markets, not just a heated seller's market. So we're going to advocate saying that's a bad idea here in Ontario. And we've got a lot of factual evidence from British Columbia as to why we don't think the government should go down that path. And one other thing we want to talk to the government about, David, yep. is ending that auctioneer exemption that currently exists within REBA, something we've been advocating for a very long time.
Does that take us down the road of the open offer stuff?
No, so that's a very different topic. Like, so okay. right now, anybody could frankly conduct an open offer process, but really there's a loophole in the legislation that allows anybody to hold themselves out to be an auctioneer, and they can then facilitate the sale of real estate by just simply holding themselves out as an auctioneer. They're not registered under the act in any way whatsoever. We think that needs to change.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sharing the contents of competing offers. A lot of people call that the open offer process, but those are really two different things. And I know you're going to ask me about that later.
I want to get there. Cause I think what I want to do here is for anybody that might have some confusion around, if I said to you in an overall, can we summarize what is Tressa in a sentence?
Look, I don't think I can do it in one simple sentence, David.
Fair.
What that was a tough task. At Arena 2016, we set out to achieve three things.
Yep.
The first was to raise the bar on consumer protection so that Ontario became the leader in North America when it comes to real estate standards. And if you said, okay, Ray, one sentence is enough, there you've got it. We wanted to be the leader when it comes to consumer protection. But it's a lot more than that. Tressa delivered new tools for Ontario realtors to use for their business success. I already mentioned one of them, personal real estate corporations. Yes. And then I think this is, I'm preaching to the choir here. I know I am when I say we wanted to give the Real Estate Council of Ontario, that is the regulator, greater strength to take care of those bad actors and get them out of this business altogether. Those are the three main goals we set out to achieve. And Tressa moves that needle in the right direction.
Okay, so then if we looked at Tressa and said, if I asked you and said, do we see this as a benefit to our industry? Is it a benefit instead to the home buyer and seller? Would I be safe to say it's for both?
Yeah, I think it is for both. Let's use the example of the removal of customer from real estate relationships.
Okay.
So, as you guys all know, in REBA, there were two types of real estate relationships for consumers. You were either a client of the brokerage or you were a customer. But when we were meeting with the ministry, that is the government, they told us that real estate consumers were oftentimes confused about the differences between being a customer and being a client. And when I talked to Ontario realtors leading up to December 1, they said, yeah, Ray, that's true. This is so confusing to real estate consumers. And in an effort to get rid of that confusion, in an attempt to make real estate relationships fully understood, to make it crystal clear, to make it black and white, customers are gone from Tressa. Full stop, no longer customers exist. You're either a client of the brokerage under Tressa or you're self-represented, which means you're entirely on your own. And I think that's good for real estate consumers because there is no longer any confusion. That is to say, you're either a client of the real estate brokerage or you're not. And I think that's also beneficial to Ontario realtors in that when there's no more confusion, when there's increased clarity surrounding real estate transactions, that's also a win for us as realtors as well.
Well, as you talk about, that confusion there between what is that duty that's owed at today versus what it might have appeared to be in the past. One thing that jumps out at me is that, the handling of the forms, right? And the fact that, there is an information guide that now needs to be handed off to somebody. The minute you start having a conversation before engaging in any type of business. But at the same time, because I've had a lot of people ask about that, there's a lot of forms I got to hand in and now I've got to do that at the top. And it's kind of confusing and it's a little bit arduous. And my response, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Ray, but my response has been back to people. It's always been a mandatory requirement under RICO that you provide an information sheet to those people about working with an agent. They need to know what they're entitled to or not entitled to right off the top. Am I correct in saying that?
Look, you're absolutely correct. This really isn't anything new. We're just using a different vehicle to deliver that message. So in REBA, I think it was Section 10 of the Act, titled Information Before Agreements, which required us to provide the consumers that we were interacting with information about real estate relationships. And how did we do that? We used ARIAs working with a realtor to communicate that message. Now, what are we obligated to use? The information guide. Now, I know realtors tell me that the information guide, 13 pages long, is too large, right? That's the number one
complaint. Too large for what?
I hear it. They just don't believe that consumers are actually going to spend the time reading all of those 13 pages.
Okay, I'm going to throw that out there for anybody tuned in right now and anybody that's going to listen to this after the fact. And I thank you all for being here, okay? How often do you read the fine print on the agreement that you signed to lease that car. How often do you read the fine print on all the things that we purchase? I bought something off of Amazon the other day. Jennifer went to go return it. She says, honey, you can't return this. I said, what do you mean you can't return it? She goes, didn't you read? No, I hit buy. And I think that that's the way we often operate. And so, again, where I'm going with that is, say, 13 pages or 7 pages or 3 pages. Yes, there might be a lot to read there, but you are handing this over to somebody. It is now their responsibility for their own self to go through and understand what that document is. And at the end of the day, if that was handed over and they had the opportunity to read it, but they chose not to, that's not on us. That's on them.
But there's two obligations. Tressa only says two things with regards to the information guide. Only two things. The first one is provide every single real estate consumer a copy of the guide.
Right.
The second part says you have to review it with them, explain it to them. Now, that doesn't mean read it word for word.
Right.
But as a professional in a real estate transaction, we have an obligation. I think it's a professional responsibility to let consumers know at a very high level, in plain, easy to understand language, what's in that guide. That was the expectation of working with a realtor. That's the same expectation with regards to the information guide. And hey, to your point, David, every conversation when we review that information guide with consumers should be, do you have any questions? Or if you have any questions at a later date, reach out to me.
Look, all these electronic signatures, and we talked about, you know, when you got into the industry, and I know I grew up in the industry, and there was a day where there weren't electronic signatures. There was a day where there wasn't email, and you actually walked in and physically presented an offer. You had the opportunity to go over the details of that offer, the conditions of the offer, clarify everything for somebody. They could then ask questions about it. Now, when we fast forward and say, I'm going to email it over, it's going to be electronic signature. And that document, that platform that I'm using actually allows me to fast forward to each signature area. What's not happening? We're not explaining what's going on. We're not sharing it with people. Yet somehow we've looked at that and said, that is fair practice. We're going to go ahead and do so. And most people have, because it alleviates from having to run and go do. It alleviates from having to explain what's going on. The reality is, this is a big piece of what we do. We are facilitating the biggest transaction of somebody's entire life. They got questions, let's answer them. There's clauses, there's conditions, there's paragraphs of information. We need to understand them, and we need to be able to convey what they are. And anybody who feels otherwise, understand again, you're not selling a bag of apples. This is the biggest asset of somebody's entire life. So being able to cross the T's and dot the I's is absolutely crucial. And I think, again, as an industry, this is helping making us better. This is helping us support why to continue to have a realtor, no matter what.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in the information guide that are really, it's a strong message that we should be conveying to consumers. And, you know, I think the information guide at the end of the day isn't a bad tool. It's certainly helping us as realtors. You asked me earlier, is Tressa for the consumer or is it for realtors? To which I said, look, I think it's mutually beneficial. Yeah. After explaining the information guide to a consumer, there's very little chance that you've got a consumer who was confused like they were in REBA about the differences between being a customer and being a client.
Right.
If we've done our job well, if we've satisfied our obligations under the Act, we're eliminating that confusion that used to exist. We're adding clarity to a real estate transaction. And I'm sure we all can agree that's a very good thing.
Hey, listen, I think we're proving our value. This is a question we've been asking across the industry for a number of years now. You know, how do we prove our value? How do we continue to share with people that we are needed when it comes to this type of transaction? I mean, look, I can scroll some of my own posts, the videos that I put up where people are ripping into us as realtors. We don't need a realtor. We pay too much money. But there's a lot of things that people don't understand about what it takes to actually put a transaction like this together. And the more that we understand and the more documentation we have that we can share and we can leverage and we can empower people to understand how we're protecting them, the more we're able to prove our value. So I see this all as good stuff. Now, I want to go back to that self-represented party and, sure, and the idea of, you know, agency or not, customer service or not. I guess one thing, did we cover off yet what I really need to know about self-represented parties?
Well, look, self-represented party is the equivalent of representing yourself in a court of law. That is being your own lawyer in a court of law.
Okay. Like, I like that.
And literally, that's the best analogy that
I can. Yeah, no, I like that. It makes it simple.
I've often said, you're either a client of the brokerage under Tressa or you're a nobody. And if you're a nobody, you are truly on your own. If you choose to be self-represented, that is, you choose not to be a client of the real estate brokerage, you're not going to get any opinions. You're not going to get any advice from a realtor because you made the decision that you're truly on your own. And I know leading up to the launch date of Tressa, that is December 1, people were very nervous about the existence of self-represented parties. I really don't believe that if we prove our value to real estate consumers, that they're going to want to be self-represented. Heck, if you're self-represented, you've got to be able to write your own real estate contracts. Like, how many consumers can really do that? People say to me, well, lawyers and other realtors are going to represent themselves. Look, I've been a realtor for 28 years. Do you know how many lawyers I've represented in real estate transactions? Mm-hmm. Do you know how many fellow realtors who have moved to my community from other areas of Ontario who still used me? They used me because they knew I was the local expert in the area. They wanted my opinions. They wanted my advice. So I don't think we're going to see an abundance of self-represented parties running around. And there's one huge misconception out there about self-represented parties, David. And if I can be self-serving and take advantage of your large following and your large audience, I want to put one misrepresentation to rest.
The floor is yours, my friend.
A lot of people are asking me, a lot of realtors are saying to me, if I have a listing and I assist a self-represented party, is the self-represented party entitled to the cooperating broker's remuneration? Or is the self-represented party entitled to a lesser purchase price because there is no cooperating broker? And the answer is you cannot pay anyone who's not a registrant. The brokerage cannot pay anyone who's not a registrant. So that self-represented party can't be paid by the brokerage to begin with. Right. And the second thing is, who said that they're entitled to a lesser purchase price? When you list the property for sale with the seller, you have a professional obligation to make the seller aware that there may be these self-represented animals out there in the marketplace. And that if you assist that self-represented party, you still expect to be paid what you contracted with the seller for. The self-represented buyer is not entitled to a lesser price, unless if that's your business model that you say to the seller, I won't charge you the full freight if I simply help a self-represented party. But there's nothing in legislation that says you have to charge a lesser commission if you help an SRP. Look, right, you're entitled to the freight you contracted for.
Well, hey, we know that FSBOs has been around for a long time, for sale by owner. So that's been an option for people to go at it on their own. We know that not everybody goes down that road because it's not the most advantageous. The other thing that I would say to everybody that's, again, tuned in, and you get into the situation where somebody's asking that question, or anybody comes at you even with the idea of, you know, trying to save a few dollars. And this is one of the things I even talk to, you know, clients about, an audience about, you know, commission objections, right? Why should I pay you so much money? Well, let's do some math here. I come to the table with the knowledge, the experience, and the know-how to get you top dollar. And we'll take one scenario there to get you top dollar. You want to save on that half a point or point of commission. The reality is you may not make as much money as you wanted to make. Now, before anybody jumps out of their seat and says, whoa, 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 that's wrong. So you're not going to do as good of a job because you're not getting paid as much. No, I didn't say that. But I will say that I'm running a business. And so if that means that I can't do the full gamut of my marketing for you for that particular listing because I just don't have enough dollars, resources to put that together, I'll do the best I can with the resources I have. But if I went the full gamut for what I've been doing out there, I know I'll get you more money. So it's a way to, you know, sort of handle that objection. But with it, I would say, you know, when people are looking to be those self-represented animals, they want to go out there and do that on their own. It is people's obligation if they want to. It's an option. It's up to us, again, to prove the value. Now, in all of this, the next question I would have then is, do we still owe a fiduciary duty to an SRP?
No, that they are not a client of the brokerage. They are entirely on their own. The duties and obligations that you owe are simply to a client, not an SRP. Now, you have to be fair and honest with an SRP.
You always should
lie right? to an SRP, yeah, right. right? You know, you still have to answer their questions honestly and factually, but you can't give them any advice or any opinions whatsoever.
I think what we need to do too as an industry is help people understand why or why not. Like if I said to you, is it a smart option for buyers or sellers? If I was a buyer or seller, you know, why would I want to do this on my own? Or why wouldn't I want to do this on my own? Again, the first things that come to mind is you haven't got the knowledge to go through this. Like, I don't even know how it would be helpful to a buyer or seller to do this on their own.
You know, I was doing a presentation. I've done over 200 presentations in the last 3 months on Tressa. And
one time I said, Superman.
I wish I had that Superman cape and the ability to fly around, David. but somebody in the audience, one time when I was reviewing what was required to be in the information guide, what the regulations say needs to be in the information guide. And when I was referencing all the benefits of being a client and all of the risks of being self-represented, one guy in the audience says, well, how come the guide doesn't talk about what the benefits of being self-represented are? So I said to him, okay, fair enough. What are the benefits? Tell me what those benefits right. are. And I opened that discussion to over 200 realtors in the room. Nobody could come up with anything. So look, I really think
that's where I'm at. I don't see it.
I don't know any. I truly don't. Look, let me put it to you this way. I work in Southwestern Ontario. I live in a small community right on the waterfront called Long Point. I service about a 20-kilometer area. If I'm moving to Toronto, for example, let's say I wanted to buy a condo in Toronto. Even though I'm registered to trade real estate anywhere in the province of Ontario, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to hire a Toronto realtor to help me find a property. That Toronto realtor knows market value. They know zoning. They know bylaws. Mm-hmm. Hell, I don't even know how to drive my truck in downtown Toronto and find a parking space. So there's no way in the world I would ever try to buy my own real estate in Toronto.
Right.
You know, like I think we're all worked up about SRPs when I think there's no value. Like I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me what are the benefits of being an SRP? You are truly on your own.
That's exactly where I'm at. Now, let's flip it to the other side, though, as the agent and say, what are some of the main danger zones that I need to know about as a realtor when somebody does choose to go down that path? Like what? And maybe we just stated these things, and I want to make sure I hit home with that so we can kind of take this part, put it to bed. But what can I absolutely not do? We talked about I cannot provide information. We also said I cannot lie.
Right.
Anything else that comes to them, like just as that sort of vague or maybe specific but pointed list at the top there?
Yeah.
There's a lot I got to pay attention to.
There's a criteria. There's a two-step process right in Tressa that tells you what you can in fact do when you're helping an SRP. And I say helping on purpose, David. That's all you're able to do for an SRP. Just help them or assist them. And you're only able to help them. And here's the first part, as a service to your actual client of the brokerage. So let's say there's a buyer out there in the marketplace who, for whatever wild and crazy reason, wants to be self-represented. And they ask me to look at one of my brokerage's listings. Showing my brokerage's listing, my seller client's property, is in fact a service to my client. So I can do that. I can help that self-represented buyer look at a property offered for sale by my brokerage. That's the first part.
Okay. What if it's not by your brokerage?
Then you can't because another brokerage's seller is not your client, right?
Got it. Yep.
Let's look at the second part of that two-step process right in the legislation. Mm-hmm. It says any help or any assistance that you give to a self-represented party must not use your skill or your judgment. Well, what's your skill or judgment in real estate? That's giving your advice, giving your opinions, and providing service. So if that same self-represented buyer who looks at my listing says, Ray, I love it. I want to buy it. I need you to help me understand what it's worth. Let's sit down together and I want you to prepare a CMA for me so I know what to offer on this property. I can't do that.
Can't do that.
Because completing a CMA uses my skill and my judgment, because I'm looking for properties that have sold that are truly comparable to the subject property.
Okay.
So that's the criteria. That's the black and white criteria in which you can help an SRP. When that SRP says, Ray, I love it. I want to make an offer. Let's go back to your office and write up an offer. I need your help writing an offer. I can't do that.
Can't do that.
Because they've decided to be on their own. So it's clear to consumers. You're either a client of the brokerage or you're a nobody.
Or you're on your own. I love the analogy about going to court, being a lawyer and representing yourself. That's it. Period.
Yeah.
Period. Okay.
Good analogy.
So as we talked about the brokerage, we talked about that and we get into the SRP, let's talk about designated representation. Can we break that down further? Like, how does that change the whole multiple representation situation? What do we absolutely need to know?
Yeah, so this is something that ARIA fought for as far back as 2017. And if I said to you, David, I was ecstatic that the government of Ontario allows us to practice designated representation, it would be the understatement of the century. Okay. This designated representation gives consumers exactly what they want. This is in line with consumer expectations. So let's think back to REBA. Let's dial back to the days of the Real Estate and Business Brokers Act. If you and I worked in the same real estate brokerage and I listed a property for sale on behalf of the brokerage, mm-hmm. and you were working with a buyer who made an offer on the brokerage's listing, that would be multiple representation. And what happens in multiple representation? Both the buyer and the seller receive limited services. We're not able to give advice to either the buyer or seller. We're not able to give our opinions to either the buyer or seller because it's multiple representation, which is a conflict of interest situation for the brokerage because we represent both parties, right?
Yep.
So that's multiple rep 101. But is that really beneficial to our consumers? Is that really understandable to them? Like when I list a property for sale and I say to the seller, all the other realtors in my office are also representing you. They're like, what? We don't know these people. We're never going to meet these people. What do you mean they're representing us? We thought we were hiring you, Ray. Like it was confusing to consumers. And like I said previously, in multiple rep, the clients receive limited services. Fast forward to December 1, when TRESA came into effect. Let's think back to my exact same example. You and I work together in the same real estate brokerage, and our brokerage is practicing designated rep. The seller can appoint me as their agent and only me as their agent. Everybody else.
Pause right there. Is that not normally, if I'm the homeowner, I'm going to play that side of the card right now. If I said to you, but yeah. Ray, yeah, I hired you and I'm designating you as my agent. That's what I understand.
That's a reality now if the brokerage adopts designated representation. But that was never a reality in REBA. See? We didn't have that option.
So incredibly beneficial if you really look at it this way, because now, as much as that's what I thought it wasn't in fact that. Now, as of December 1, it is in fact that.
And that's what I meant by this is in line with consumer expectations. Designated representation gives consumers what they always thought they were getting anyways.
Right, that's kind of where I'm going with it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And so if you're working in the same brokerage with me and you bring an offer on my listing under designated rep, mm-hmm. you're the agent for the buyer. None of us in the brokerage are agents for the buyer. That is not multiple representation. I can now fully advocate for and represent for the seller. You can now fully advocate for and represent the buyer. It gives the consumers exactly what they want. Of course, right. They don't want the limitations of multiple rep.
So what about the disclosure documents that I used to have to give out?
Well, so if there's no multiple representation in that scenario,
right.
There's no disclosure of multiple rep. But here's the beautiful news. ARIA fought tooth and nail to preserve consumer choice. And frankly, David, I never thought we'd win this one. Okay. And when I woke up to that email from the government that Monday morning saying that multiple representation could still exist if that's what the clients wanted, I was like a kid on Christmas morning. I couldn't believe we achieved that. And it's not self-serving to the realtors. This was good for the consumers. Let's think of this example.
I was going to ask you that. Who does this benefit over here?
Yeah. Okay. It's beneficial to the consumers in this example. Let's say I'm moving to Thunder Bay. I'm going to call a friend of mine who practices real estate in Thunder Bay. And I'm going to say to her, hey, Diane, I'm moving to Thunder Bay. I need you to help me buy a property. So we go out and look at a few properties. And then guess what happens, David? The house that I fall in love with, my dream home, is listed for sale by Diane. Diane's the designated agent for the seller. If the government had in fact banned multiple rep, Diane would have to say to me, sorry, buddy, even though I've known you for 20 years, I can't represent you in the purchase. To which I'd say, what do you mean? I've known you for 20 years. I know you. I like you. I trust you. I know you've got my back. She would have had to say, sorry, pal, my hands are tied. The government won't allow me to represent you. But that's not what the government said, David. The government said, where the clients in a real estate transaction want to use the same agent, they can, with strict rules in place. And that's where we get to the disclosure of multiple representation. There's very strict rules surrounding the practice of designated representation. Here's what's required. The agent who's finding themselves facilitating a transaction involving designated rep has to, as soon as multiple rep is created, stop the process and tell both parties, hey, look, this is multiple rep. Mm-hmm. This is what multiple rep looks like. This is what it feels like. Are you cool with that? And if both parties say, yeah, that we're fine with that, we want to use you, and we give our consent to proceed in writing, multiple rep can proceed. And that's why I say it's good for consumers, because consumers can still continue to work with the realtor of their choice. That is the realtor they know, they like, and they trust.
So this really is, this, like you said a moment ago, this has benefited both sides. Multiple representation is still a thing. If so, if it happens that the scenario lines up to the example you just shared, where it's the agent rather than the brokerage.
Right.
But now what it does is it actually opens up more opportunities for agents within a brokerage to deal with both the buyer and the seller. And again, as long as there's designated representation, you can deal with your buyer, I'll deal with my seller. We don't have to do this whole disclosure thing. We still have a duty to make sure everything's done properly.
For sure.
On behind the scenes. But now we don't have to go through this other disclosure process.
Right on. Right on.
It seems beneficial to me for both parties. And I could see where you were blown away by the fact that that email came on that Monday morning saying, yeah, you could do that too.
But
the logic is there though, Ray.
Yeah. And I think, David, we're the only province in all of Canada that has that. But AREA fought really hard and painted a very vibrant picture to the government as to why this is something consumers would want. And there's real life situations where the consumer wants to work with the same agent. And look, the reality of our geography in Northern Ontario is that sometimes there's only one or two agents in a community that service that area. You, in fact, would be putting the consumer at risk if you said, I'm sorry, you can't use that agent in Northern Ontario that has the property listed for sale, because you may be forcing that consumer, that buyer, to go back to the city and use a realtor that has no knowledge or experience in that northern community. So it, in fact, removes risk from the transaction as well.
Let me throw this one at you, because we were just looking at the chat in our VIP room here. Somebody brought up something about a team. Where does a team fall into that?
Yeah, so teams have a lot of heavy lifting here. They've got to take a long, hard look at their structure, because the nature of a team is that they collaborate, that they share all information, right? The problem is, when you practice designated representation, the agent or agents, there can be more than one agent on a designated representation agreement, are responsible for safeguarding the confidential information of the client. Unlike in brokerage representation, where the agent who was working with the seller could tell everybody the same information in the brokerage because everybody in the brokerage was representing that particular client. So teams have to figure out whether or not the, let's say there's 10 team members on a particular team, are going to continue to share all the same information about the same clients. Because think of it this way. If a team with 10 members continues to share information and then they receive an inquiry about the brokerage's listing, the team's listing, and one of those team members goes and shows the property to the buyer who wants to offer on it, that would be multiple representation, right?
So the minute we get into a team situation, it seems like we're more up the alley of multiple rep.
If you stick with your existing team infrastructure in a model where you did share all information. So existing teams might want to do this, David. They may want to divide the team in half. This half of the team are going to be designated listing agents. This half of the team are going to be designated buyer's agents.
Ray, when you say that, you're saying like right now, a suggestion could be sit down with your team and discuss how we're moving forward.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. In my brokerage, we've got two different teams and we sat down together and we said, we need to figure out the infrastructure of these teams moving forward. Are we going to look the same as we did prior to December 1, or do we need to rejig our infrastructure here? Like, teams have a lot of work to do. They have to take a look at their structure to figure out how they're going to make this work.
And so forgive me, the action step to that, if we had to say, go do this to a team right now, what would that be in sort of a kind of a nutshell?
Well, let's think back to that example that I was using prior. You've got 10 team members.
Okay.
Five of those team members may be just strictly listing agents. The other five be strictly buyer's agents. However, it's not just enough to say that. You've got to put up that wall, that wall of separation where the listing agents don't share any confidential information about those sellers, right? You can't talk to those buyer's agents on your team about the money or motivation of your seller client. Like, if the seller's selling and they need a really quick sale in like 30 days because they bought another house that's closing in 30 days firm, you can't share that with the team members who are now acting as buyer's agents, right? So teams have a lot of work to do here to figure out what their infrastructure is going to look like.
Okay. So just some advice to those of you on teams or that are team leaders, take some time to think this one through, review your obligations, and then sit down and discuss what that strategy is going to be going forward, because there are the options between, again, designated as well as multiple rep. They're both on the table. It's a matter of figuring out how you're going to go about making sure that, disclosure stays within the confines of the rules.
For sure. Yeah. And on that note, I will say that Rico did produce an excellent video, and there's a transcript of the video about designated representation. And there was a lot of questions and answers on that video that pertained to teams. So if there are any team members here today, I would encourage you to go to rico.on.ca and watch or read series number 4. It's outstanding.
So we've got, would this be it there? Rico.on.ca.
That's it. And just scroll around, look for video number 4. You can watch the video, or if you want to download the transcript of the video, it's there. It's really helpful to teams. It's helpful to everybody, but teams have the heaviest lift here.
All right, perfect. So I'm just putting that up here. Sure, everybody's got that just as a resource. So I've thrown that up on the screen. Just again, make sure you go check that out. That'll give you some good information here directly from, from Rico, just and Aria to help everybody through that. So, okay, I want to switch gears here now and move into another one. And I brought this up off the top, and I mentioned this in a video that I put out the other day as well. Again, a very subjective opinion here, but I'd love to table this and for a conversation today, because I don't see it as a benefit to either the buyer or the seller. Like I said, purely subjective, but first, what do we need to know about the open offer process?
Yeah, so the first thing that everybody needs to know is that the seller doesn't have to pick a lane. And by that, I mean, there's no rules in Tressa that says if a seller is going to share the terms of competing offers, that they have to tell you up front, that they have to tell you in advance that they're going to share those terms. The seller can do whatever the seller wants, whenever they want. So imagine this, David. I'm a listing agent and you're a buyer's agent, mm-hmm. and you say to me, Ray, I've got an offer on your property. And I say, hey, David, there's four other offers. The seller has five offers for consideration. And you say to me, Ray, is the seller going to share the terms of any of those offers? And I say, no, David, she said she's not. She thinks that a blind bidding process will get her the most amount of money for her property. So you and your buyer submit an offer on that basis. And then I present all five offers. And the seller turns to me and says, Ray, I want you to tell everybody that the best offer I received was for $2 million. I'm going to have some ticked off buyers and some ticked off buyer's agents, aren't I? Yeah. Because I told you that the seller was going to conduct a blind bidding process.
Right.
But she changed her mind. But guess what?
Which she's allowed to do.
Okay. I didn't do anything wrong and neither did the seller. So that's the first thing we need to know, that the sellers don't have to pick a lane here.
One sec. Do you guys all understand what he's saying here? If you just answered yes, I can't hear you. Sorry, I had to pull that one off. Okay, Ray, keep going.
And then the next thing is the seller can share as little or as much from any of the competing offers as they want. There's nothing in TRESA that says the seller has to disclose or the seller can disclose X, Y, and Z.
And this disclosure happens through an email, a social media post, a phone call, anything?
So the regulation, David, doesn't specifically state, here's the vehicle in which you do this.
Okay.
It just simply says you can communicate it.
Now, so I can take an ad in the front page of the paper and we're good.
Look, yeah, this refers to competing offers. So you need to find a vehicle to communicate to the buyers who are in a bidding war the information that the seller has instructed you to share. You might choose to send an email to their buyer's agent. You may choose to send a text to their buyer's agent. ARIA's created a form. It's form 209 to facilitate this process. It's an easy peasy form. I would strongly recommend that we all use it because it's so simple. It creates consistency in the marketplace. And it's a tool to make sure that we comply with the requirements of the regulation. So check 209 out, form 209. It's called something like seller's permission to share substance of competing offers. But it's form 209. It's available.
Is that right? Sort of seller's permission form with that.
Yeah, just search form 209 when you go into the ARIA standard form section of the ARIA.com website.
Okay. Now, my obligation though, as that seller's, as the agent, whether I use the form or I chose text message,
right?
Is there any stipulation that I'm obligated to tell every single one of those offers?
So there's only three rules. One is, as I mentioned, the seller can share as little or as much as they want. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that if a seller makes a disclosure that is shares the terms of competing offers, every buyer who submitted an offer must receive the same information. So if there's 10 written offers, the seller has to share that disclosure with all 10. The seller can't pick and choose. The seller can't say, I didn't like four of those 10. They weren't even close. Don't tell them. You have to. The legislation says you have to give everybody who submitted an offer the same info. The third rule is this. The only information a seller can't share is information that would reveal the personal identity of the buyer. What would that be? The buyer's name. And I think if the buyer had a home to sell, we wouldn't disclose the address of the home to be sold because as realtors, we could figure out who that owner was from the address, right?
So we call them buyer one versus Judy Smith.
Right. Right.
Okay. So it does provide some privacy for the buyer.
It does.
That's good clarity, at least on a very personal level here. I thought to myself, I go, well, if I'm purchasing a property and part of this is that whole sort of like, you know, auction process that you almost think about where you sit there going, I don't want to stand on somebody's front lawn and get to the point where I'm priced out from being able to put my flag up to say, I want to, like, I'm done. I can't spend anymore. Some people from an ego perspective would sit back and say, I don't want people to know what my buying power is or is not. So I guess there's a positive in terms of to the buyer that they're at least not going to be, nobody's going to know who they are.
That's the privacy aspect of it. But I think of it this way as well. Imagine if you're a buyer and another buyer's name is revealed to you, and that other buyer is a celebrity or somebody who has incredibly deep pockets.
Yep.
You may cause the other buyers to walk away from the transaction because they'll say, there's not a chance in hell we're going to beat David Greenspan's offers. He's got so much money, he's going to get it no matter what. So you would actually be doing a disservice, aside from the privacy aspect, to your seller client in some instances where the buyer was a recognizable name that caused somebody to walk away.
This is an interesting one. You know, I try to wrap my head around, why would a seller, see, I could see that a buyer has zero control whether this happens or not. I don't know where the, I guess the benefit to the buyer could be, and much, I guess it's the same. It goes hand in hand with the buyer and the seller. When I think to myself, because I just had a lot of thoughts go through my mind going to the exact same point right here. So let me clarify this, but as a seller, if I decide to, and again, subjective, I just want to put that out there as I say this. If I decide to say, I want this to be open, my thoughts, the first thoughts that come to mind to me is, if somebody offered me $5 for my house, then we get into competing. We know there's other offers out there. Well, I don't know what they offered. I'm, you know, this person's now all of a sudden going to go and offer $10. Well, if I go ahead and I say, well, hey, there's offers out there, here's what they are. Now I realize I don't have to offer 10. This next person could come and offer six, like just go up a dollar rather than $5. And if we're talking real estate, we're talking, you know, 50,000 versus 75,000 or 100,000. Why would a seller, again, in my mind,
shoot
themselves in a foot like that?
I hear exactly what you're saying. I hear you loud and clear. That was my initial knee-jerk reaction as well, David. Okay. I thought the same. Like, look, every one of us on this call have sold a house where the successful buyer paid hundreds of thousands of dollars more than the second best offer. Like, we've all been there, right? So I understand why we all jumped to that conclusion. But guess what? When we did our heavy lifting at AREA, when we researched this, and when we looked to other countries who already have this option available to sellers, we couldn't believe what we discovered. As a matter of fact, in some instances, this sharing contents of competing offers caused house prices to go even greater. So it's not always what we see. Like, look, I'm a competitive guy. I know you're a competitive guy, David. Look, we were both born on January 17th.
That's right.
We're both
Everybody knows we actually share a birthday, the two of us.
Can you imagine you and I trying to bid against one another? Like, and you know what this was called in the industry? Auction fever. Right. So when I started to hear from my counterparts around the world, I was shocked at what I discovered, that this situation sometimes, in fact, caused house prices, sale prices to get even greater.
Wow.
So it's not always what we think.
Yeah. No, you know what? It's interesting you say that, because I'll say this has been, again, my opinion so far has been sitting back saying, and I mean, I believe what you're saying when you said that. I still, in my mind, the first thought is, why in the world would I do that to myself as a seller? Why would I want to let people know instead of trying to get this thing to climb to outrageous prices? And let's just be clear here. If I'm the seller and I'm the guy who's about to benefit from the dollar amount, I'm okay with people going over asking. I'm okay with people spending the extra money that maybe they didn't need to spend to get into the property.
Here's the funny thing, though, that I want to let your audience know about.
Yep.
It was buyers who demanded this transparency piece be added to legislation. It was buyers.
I can see that.
Who ran to the government. And this was particularly relevant during the COVID real estate market, where buyers said, this is unfair. This is not transparent. We don't know if we paid $200,000 more than the next guy. And on the other hand, there were buyers who said to the government, well, if we had have known what other people were paying, we would have paid more. So there was both sides of the coin. But here's the funny thing. Now that sellers have this option, guess what they're saying? I don't want anybody to know what I offer. So you've got to be careful what you ask for. And the reason I raise this is because you mentioned, David, that this is really in the seller's hands. It's really on the seller's lap. But buyers do have a little bit of control here. AREA introduced one new clause for buyers to consider inserting into their offers. If buyers are truly opposed to having the terms of their offer shared, AREA has created a clause that says something like, in the event that the seller shares the terms of my offer automatically becomes null and void.
Right.
So what are you doing with that clause? You're putting pressure on the seller not to share the terms of your offer. Now, our counterparts around the province who have already been around the country who have already been practicing this sharing contents of competing offers tell me that that clause in their provinces is rarely used. Mm-hmm. And why? Because then their buyer's offer falls right off of the table. They don't even have the opportunity anymore to try to buy the property. So there's a lot of moving parts here. What brokerages need to do, particularly around this aspect of the new legislation, the sharing contents of competing offers, have a brainstorming session, have a mind share.
You could call it that. Go for it. Yeah,
I was going to call it mastermind, but let me use a mind share session where we sit around and we discuss all of these different scenarios, right? Look at the rules around the competing offers, come up with all of the different scenarios, look at that area clause and figure out how you're best going to advise your clients what to do in these situations. At the end of the day, our job is to make our clients aware of their options. Let them know what the ramifications of those options are, and then let them make a decision. It's not our job to make a decision. It's our job to let them know what their options are, the ramifications of those options, and then sit back.
Okay, so there's the advice we would provide to everybody about this.
For sure.
Okay. So then I guess on that particular topic, maybe the there's so much moving around in my mind about this particular topic right here. I guess one of the questions that I had that as you were talking about this with the colleagues from, you know, different areas, different countries, everywhere else that have done this, have we seen that they are taking advantage of opening it up more? Like, is the seller actually doing that?
So when I talk to our counterparts across Canada,
yep.
No.
Okay.
It's not the predominant method of selling a home.
Okay.
But what I can see happening, and you know, the devil will be in the details when this all rolls out. I can see people thinking the same way you think, David. Oh, blind bidding is going to be the way to go. I'm not going to tell anybody anything. But what are you going to do if you get two offers, David, and they're damn close? They're really close. At that point, you may say, these are so close. I don't know which one to pick. Let me share terms here and see if I can get these guys bidding against one another.
You know, it's funny you bring it up because the other thought that was going through my mind is if I did sit back, let's say I was either the buyer or the buyer's agent, and I saw that there was an offer that was pretty much the same as what I put in there. And now it's like, whoa, we got to make ours better.
Yep.
I guess I would throw out there, there's a lot of different options. You could increase your dollar value. You could reduce closing time. You could, you know, there's so many different aspects of that, you know, the different conditions you put in there or don't put in there, right? A cover letter or not. I mean, you know, to whatever people think about cover letters, you know, there are different ways, but this is where you get to get creative and you get to really prove your value, like your value against the person you're competing against.
You know,
this is where you're in the ring getting fun.
That's incredible. Aside from the regulations, aside from traffic, this is something that's now a reality. This is law. And the reason that I think brokerages, we as realtors should sit down in our respective brokerages and discuss and debate this is so that when we're sitting in front of our client, we can show to them, we know what we're doing. Where our competitors are going to sit there and say, yeah, we don't know. It's not been tested yet. Look, we need to be able to come to the table eye to eye, face to face, belly to belly with our clients and show them we understand what this looks like, what it feels like. Let them know that these are your options. What's your comfort level here? Like, this will allow us to bring value to the table. And too many people, I hate to say it, are saying, you know what, we're just going to let the chips fall where they may, see how this rolls out. No. In my brokerage, we've sat around and I said, we want to be the educators about this new piece to our respective clients. We want to be recognized as the experts because that just gets us another leg up.
You know, somebody a number of months ago, I was at an event down in the States and we were having a conversation about AI. Mm-hmm. And I pushed back a little bit. And this was at sort of the onset of the ChatGPT thing, where it was like, you know, everybody could all of a sudden start to like just grab content from this thing and let's share it out and put their name on it. And I had my qualms about that, and I still do. He used an analogy about the wheel. And he said, you know, back in the day when the wheel was invented, if you had pushed back on the wheel and you didn't use it, where would you be today? And the analogy just, it got you thinking. And I sort of, you know, he tied that way better together with the AI conversation around starting to somehow just get involved and understand what it's about versus going, ah, forget it. Now, as I bring that up, I tie it right back into what you just said around all of this. And I love the fact, I love the point you make there. And I really stand behind that of, you know, within your brokerage, start to talk about this, start to test out this method. Understand it's here. It is living. It is breathing. It is not leaving. So understanding it is better than not understanding it. Being a leader at it is better than not. Don't push back. Instead, embrace and try to figure out how can I navigate these new waters.
I think all of us should be out there on social media, blogs, what have you, educating consumers about this already. I did that already. I created a blog about this new option for sellers. It caused my phone to ring because prospective sellers said, Ray, tell me about what you're talking
right,
about.
Right, right. See? But this is the educate to communicate piece that we've been talking about for a long time now. Lots of questions that I could ask. I know there's obviously a lot more within this that I may not have asked you about, but is there anything glaring that we did not touch on today that you're chomping at the bit to share right now that we just need to get across?
No, you touched on the three key changes that I think are important to realtors and consumers. That's self-represented parties, designated representation, and the ability to share the terms of competing offers.
Okay, good stuff. So we did a pretty good job over here today.
You did your homework.
So what if I don't know, and I say I on behalf of all of us, if I don't know, or I still don't understand, or I still have questions along the way, what advice have we got for me?
Aria's created a dedicated website. It's aria.com/Tressa. aria.com/Tressa. Here's what you'll find there. There's a series of videos. We call them Tressa in Two. The reason we call them Tressa in Two is because none of those videos are longer than 2 minutes in length. And we do a down and dirty, raw and real discussion of all the different topics within Tressa. I encourage you to watch them. We also have an FAQ section on that website. As we receive questions from members around the province, we post those questions on the website and we provide the answer. That list grows every day as we receive more questions. And then my favorite part of the website is the section called Get in Touch. You can submit a question, include your email address, fire off your question, and Aria will respond to you. Whether you have a question tonight, tomorrow, next week, or next year, Aria will respond to your Tressa questions. And guys, I'm the one responding to all those emails. So when you send emails through to Aria using aria.com/Tressa, know that it's me on the other end who's going to respond to you. Tell me, you watch this session with David so that I know who I'm speaking to. I always like to know where people got the information from. But don't be afraid to engage with Aria. Aria truly has your back when it comes to making sure you comply with these new regulations because it's so critically important in the interest of consumer protection.
Absolutely. Absolutely amazing. Ray, thank you for this. This is amazing information. And like I said, I keep referring to Superman. It blows me away that you're the guy answering those emails as well. But you've really taken it upon your shoulders. And I know with a team with you that certainly supports in really getting this message across to our entire province. And we've got a lot of agents here, a lot of people as part of it. We've got a lot of great people. You're certainly right there at the top of them. And it's, you know, it's absolutely amazing that you've taken the time to do all this. So I've got, just before we sign off, I've got a question I need to ask you, sure. Which is just one that I'd love to ask at the end of my show on a regular end of your day. And you've gone through all this. You've got a family business. You've got a real estate business. You do everything you do to help our real estate industry here in Ontario and across the country. How do you know it's been a successful day for you when you finally shut it down for the night?
You know, we've all heard that if you truly enjoy your work, it's really not work. And when I do all of this, I take tremendous satisfaction in helping Ontario realtors. And I know we're moving the needle, David. I know 2023 was a challenging real estate market for realtors. There were a lot of issues in Ontario real estate that caused division amongst realtors. However, most people are good. You won't believe, David, the number of emails, phone calls, texts. Believe it or not, the number of gifts that people send to me thanking me for helping them navigate Tressa. Like, it just blows my mind away how kind, thankful, and generous people are. And when just a simple text, a simple thank you, lets me know that this is important work. And I just love doing it when all that stuff happens.
Very cool answer, man. Very, very cool. Any final words of wisdom that you want to share with everybody as we sign off today?
Look, Tress is a good thing. We're overcomplicating it. Don't stress about it. Keep it simple. Engage with me at aria.com/Tressa. We will hold your hand. This is nothing to be afraid of. We have responded to over 5,000 emails already from Ontario realtors. I'm responding to most of them in less than 24 hours. So guys, we're in this together.
Mr. Ray Ferris, you are the man, a fellow birthday buddy, but more so, you know, just a leader in this industry. And we are grateful for you. It is amazing to have somebody like you on our side as realtors, as an industry, and just all the efforts that you put in on behalf of everybody. I thank you very, very much for not only making the time for the MindShare podcast today, but for everything you do.
Well, thank you very much, David. It's great to be back.
We'll have to do it again sooner than later, my friend. Thank you for being here.
Take care. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Happy holidays to you and the family as well. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
You're either listening to this on one of your favorite podcast platforms, or maybe you went to my website, mindshare101.com. While you're there, be sure to download your free copy of the Ultimate Marketing Bundle, our 31-page ebook, including your free 90-day social media content calendar to help you build more mindshare so that you get more market share. A reminder as well that if you want to talk about personalized one-to-one coaching, an in-person keynote talk for your upcoming event, and or ongoing virtual training, just get in touch with me. We'll set up a consultation call, learn more what you're looking to achieve and how we will help you do just that. For all inquiries, just get in touch with us. We'll talk to you shortly. Of course, don't forget to leave a review at ratethispodcast.com/mindshare101. If you are an iTunes user, go straight to iTunes. Big 5 stars. Let us know how much you love today's show. Of course, if you're on Spotify, you can go and rate the show over there as well. Again, this link, ratethispodcast.com/mindshare101, will take you very quickly to either one of those platforms. I'd be super grateful if you took a quick moment right now to go and do that. And of course, if we haven't, let's connect on Facebook at mindshare101 and on Instagram at David Greenspan 101. Just before we take off, I want to send a big thank you once again to Kits Keep In Touch Systems, as well as REM Real Estate Magazine, for sponsoring this episode of the MindShare podcast. Be sure to visit my website, mindshare101.com, to learn more about what these powerful companies will do to help you grow your business. This has been another episode of the MindShare podcast. Thank you for tuning in.